Okay, thank you very much all for being here. First of all, I'd like to start by saying that my presentation is a little bit different than everyone else's, considering that I'm not working with commercial food production, but rather my research is focused on supporting small-scale indoor food production for home growers. So there is a growing trend, not only in the U.S., but worldwide, where millions of people want to grow plants at home. However, this doesn't mean that everyone has a backyard. Instead, they might have to move this plant inside their homes. There are several challenges that consumers are facing. For example, they don't have an agricultural background, which is the most important one. So therefore, they tend to rely on different sources, for example, Reddit or YouTube, that have millions of users in threads named urban farming or hydroponics. And they're asking questions regarding some problems that they face. For example, in here, that's root rot. Other kinds of problems might be deficiencies or maybe pH imbalances. And this very prominent one, which this person is asking for help and what is wrong with my tomatoes. And honestly, the most voted comment in this thread was, there's everything happening in this picture. What's not wrong with your tomatoes? So even though they are asking these questions, it doesn't necessarily mean that they are getting the right information. And even some of the recommendations, even if they're from goodwill, they might end up hurting even more their plants because it doesn't come from reliable research-based information, which is where we come in. So part of the academic challenges that we are facing is that there is an opportunity for us as scientists to provide this kind of information. For example, in nutrient management, maybe the lighting requirements that they need in a plant that's grown indoors. But we have yet to develop this area of research because most of it is focused in greenhouse production. I tried researching for this in Google Scholar, in many sources, and the top keyword that comes up is greenhouse, not necessarily indoors or non-commercial, because that's not very popular yet. So some of the biggest differences that we can find in small-scale indoor food production is that most of the research is based for commercial production, which means that we have very big greenhouses, even if it's hydroponic or just soil-less production, like the picture we can see up top. And it's primarily focused on maximizing profit by reducing the inputs and increasing yield. However, this is not the main goal for home growers. What they are looking for is to just have like a sustained production throughout the year, or if not, throughout the crop's life cycle. So some of the challenges that they face as well in this type of production is that the lack of information regarding the plant selection, for example, the cultivars that we might use, we have to help them out in this case to identify which are the ones that are maybe adapted or resistant to lower light levels or maybe to less nutrient applications. And in my case, I'm focusing on the nutrient solution management, which means that I'm trying to find out which is the least amount of times that we have to intervene before we have to do this nutrient solution replacement. Because even though a home grower might start out really excited about a project, trying to get their crops to grow, maybe get a few tomatoes or get basil leaves, which is what I'm working with, it doesn't mean they're going to sustain that excitement throughout the whole growing process. So we really need to make it easier on them by finding low maintenance, easy to use, and robust systems that can satisfy their gardening experience without sacrificing the plant performance. So the objectives of my study were to compare the effect of different nutrient solution replacement intervals on solution EC, growth, and yield of hydroponic basil and tomato, which are two of the most preferred edibles grown by homeowners or home growers. We hypothesized that it's very likely that we could extend these nutrient solution replacement intervals from the 2 weeks, which is typically recommended, to even 4, 6, or maybe even 8 weeks, depending on solution EC. And the second objective was to quantify and compare water and nutrient uptake of hydroponic basil and tomato. And we hypothesized that, for example, in greenhouse, we have optimal conditions, so they might be growing a lot faster. However, in indoor production, they might have less light, less nutrients. Maybe we want to apply less water. So we're going to have different changes in this, which is why we also focused a little bit later on creating a growth model for this. The materials and methods are that phase one of this experiment was conducted inside a greenhouse, and right now I'm conducting phase two, which is indoors, and the reason why we did this is because we wanted to identify which are the possible treatments that can be moved into an indoor environment, because if we can identify which ones have too high ECs in a greenhouse, it means it definitely cannot be done in an indoor environment. And also because of the part of the growth model I mentioned, we want to know what are the different conditions and how plant response will be depending on the light level, humidity, and everything else. These plants were grown in 50-cell trays. They were irrigated with 115 parts per million of nitrogen until they were transplanted into the respective system. So there was one tomato plant per system in the large reservoirs and four small plants in the smaller reservoirs, basil plants. As you can notice in the treatments, since basil was only grown up until 8 weeks and tomato was grown till 12 weeks, we have an extra treatment so we could identify which is the best time to replace the solution. And the fertilizers used were water-soluble or a liquid fertilizer. Tap water was used for this experiment. It had a pH of 8.3 and an EC of 0.34. And pH was adjusted every time nutrients were added to the solutions to maintain a range between 5.5 and 6.5. So this is a list of the data that was collected. I monitored the nutrient solution every week, and throughout the experiment, I also kept track of plant growth. We had a destructive treatment, let's say, and this was used to monitor what was the plant growth and what was the remaining EC of each of the solutions. And also, we did an elemental analysis for tissue and nutrient concentrations. So I'll only present a little bit of the selected results because of time constraints. However, keep in mind that there's a lot of similar trends between the basil and tomato crops, so I'll only be highlighting the differences or maybe the most interesting findings that we had. So in this case, the EC after adding the liquid fertilizer for tomato, as you can see, the green line up top means that was the one with no solution changes. EC was considerably high. It's above 7. And I'm going to show you later the data for the yield, which was greatly affected by this very high EC. However, the other ones, as you can see, the line drops. That means that there was a solution change. And so we pretty much pressed a reset on the EC levels. And in general, EC accumulated over time in large reservoirs due to a lower dilution. So it was similar for basil. However, because the reservoirs were a lot smaller, we had more water added. And so the whole reservoir's capacity was completely replaced with each water application, like between the nutrient intervals. So this meant that there was a higher dilution rate, and therefore the pH increased a little bit more and the EC lowered. For the water consumption, we know that there is increase of water consumption whenever there is greater plant growth. However, we definitely noticed that when there is high EC, there is lower water consumption. As you can see, again, in the green line, which depicts that there was no solution change throughout the experiment for tomato. And for basil, there was a similar trend. However, I had to intervene many more times because, as you can see in this image, there was a huge mass of roots pretty much compacted that filled up the majority of the reservoir. So it meant that I had to be there a lot more to try and fill up the water to the level that we had predetermined. For the water applied, per reservoir, tomatoes consumed about 112 liters in that 12-week period, and basil only 39 liters in the 8-week period. However, I had to be there for tomatoes 22 times, but for basil 23, which means they definitely require a lot more effort, not to mention the amount that I had to do several pinchings throughout time, because as you can see, they're very big basil plants. And also I had to stake them and make sure that they were kept upright. So there was a lot of things that had to be done with them. And it wouldn't be that ideal for home growers to have to do all of these activities. Then for the tomato fruit ripening, there was about 43% of fruit that were mature. This means that the other 57% wasn't. And if we kept those tomato plants growing after the 12-week period, we could definitely have a sustained yield. As I mentioned before, the tomato yield was greatly affected by the solution EC. So if you notice in the first two columns, that was for the treatment that had a replacement every 2 weeks. So we have a very good production. However, for the one that's at 12 weeks, which meant no solution change throughout the experiment, the production was greatly reduced. So the yield was severely affected by the high EC. So the green lines that you, or the green bars, are for the water-soluble fertilizer, which had a generally lower EC than the liquid fertilizer. So if you remember the previous graph, we had an EC of about 7.5 for the last treatment, and you can see that when we have high EC, there is a high blossom and rot incidence and therefore a reduced fresh mass. Taking into account that this is total tomato yield, so all fruits were counted, including the blossom and rot, the split fruits, the mature ones. Okay, and finally, we have the nitrogen and the calcium uptake. We know that there is nitrogen is an active uptake nutrient, and calcium is a passive uptake nutrient, which means that they have different rates. And this is the reason why we can see that nitrogen was absorbed, obviously, increasingly as the plant grew. The solution had 174 ppm of nitrogen. So when the plants were very big, they were almost consuming everything that was inside that reservoir regarding nutrients. However, it wasn't the same for calcium, as it was mostly deposited at the bottom of the reservoirs, as you can see there. And just so you keep in mind, we can definitely modify the nutrient concentration, so we could probably adjust them depending on growth rates. And if we are considering applying this for home growers, it would be better if we gave them already like a guideline or maybe something that they just put inside the reservoirs so that EC doesn't keep on climbing if we're going to recommend that they do less nutrient replacements. So some of the conclusions that we came to was that overall, yield for basil was not affected in between the 0.5 to 4 millisiemens per centimeter that we had of EC. So we can just say that there is no solution replacement needed for small reservoirs under the greenhouse conditions. And right now I'm conducting the phase two of this experiment, which is indoors, and we are seeing increases in EC of up to 8 millisiemens, which is very high. So we're definitely going to eliminate the treatment that had 8 weeks. That was plausible for greenhouse, but definitely not for indoor conditions. Then, as I already mentioned, yield for tomato was affected by the EC, which means that we cannot or we shouldn't let the replacement intervals go beyond 8 weeks. We could probably test a new interval at 6 weeks, which we didn't do, but would be good to determine if the best one is either 4 or 6. And finally, as I already mentioned, for basil, multiple plants in smaller reservoirs meant that we had a lot more effort. We need a lot more effort to maintain the systems, and the staking and the pinching and the harvesting of everything. And then for tomato, the larger reservoirs with one plant were less effort. However, they would need to have more frequent replacement intervals because of the large amount of water that we had. And these are a few of the data that we collected regarding the environmental conditions. And I'd like to thank the Scotts Miracle-Gro Company for their funding and all of their support, and my professor, Selena Gomez. Thank you. Any questions? Yes. Yeah.
It's just a clarification. Within the reservoir, how did you manage oxygen? Did you mix air with the solution? Okay.
So the question is, how did I manage oxygen? And I had, for example, the smaller reservoirs had an air pump, so it was constantly like being aerated. And then for the larger reservoirs, they already had an incorporated pump, and that made water flow around it. And there was also an extra tube that made water circulate inside the system. Thank you. Yes?
For the region not to replace it, when you added the water every day, do you know the water quality, the iron concentration, tap water, or?
Okay. So for the water quality question, I use tap water, and the tendency for tap water in Gainesville in general is for it to be a pH of 8.3 and an EC of 0.34. It had an alkalinity of 40. So it's actually quite good quality of water. And whenever we had to do the pH adjustments, everything went well. And even still, when we added the fertilizers, that made the pH lower and the EC adjust like to the right level. So that prevented a lot of interference regarding the pH adjustments. So, yeah.
At the end of the study, did you analyze the nutrient solution? For example, the EC is this much high, but do you know what ion contributed to this high EC?
So your question is if I analyze the nutrient solutions, and yes, I did. I didn't present that data because it's a lot of data. But the primary ion that we found was that calcium had accumulated as well as magnesium. And as I mentioned before, 174 ppm of nitrogen were added in this solution. However, at the beginning, it wasn't consumed in its entirety. But we did find that at the very end, when the plant had grown a lot, they had consumed almost everything regarding nitrogen and phosphorus. Thank you.